Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Monday, June 26th edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Hope everyone had a good weekend. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Conan and Dennis Dick. Just trying to get through the Monday morning grind. Got some news, got some movers. We got a big secondary offering from Goose. We're going to talk about that. Pandora CEO potentially stepping down. We're going to recap any volatility or lack thereof at the close on Friday due to the Russell rebalance or other movers. Got the European banks hot this morning as well off of some news from Italy. And we're going to talk through that, and we got some pretty decent amount of ratings today. So we're going to get through all those and then take your questions from the chat. As always, Joel, how are we doing in the S&Ps this morning?
Well, I was prepared to talk about the nauseating trading range that we've been in, basically from 2430 to 2440. But we're perking up this morning. We're trading up 675 at the highs of the pre-market session. Could be a major breakout here on the upside. Above, we have the all-time closing high at 2247.50 and then the all-time high at 2451.50. So important that we hold these gains early in the session. Crude oil not being affected by this market at all. Trading in the 43 handle, looking on the daily charts, finding some support in the lower 42s. Let's see if we can challenge that 44 high that we had from Thursday. And gold and silver being ignored this morning. Gold down $15 at 1241.30. Silver in the red by 20 cents here at 1645. Dennis, what are you making of the rally in the S&Ps this morning?
Oh, it's a Monday.
It's a Monday?
Or a Tuesday, or a Wednesday, or a Thursday. Isn't it just when we have no news, really, that we just rally? Isn't that just the way this market works?
I guess so. I guess the
rally is the new flat.
Yeah. No, we're up. This is significant, though, Dennis. We had that
move.
Trading range. Bix is going to hold, or are we just going to fade and go right back into that 2430 handle?
Well, I'm just, you know, it's this market. I'm just basically just going with the flow. It seems like every time you get a little bit of consolidation, you start to break out to the upside. So I'm not betting on the downside at all. And if we look like we're bumping up against the resistance on the S&Ps, I mean, think about, you know, the overall broad market here. So, you know, you've had a lot of stocks that have obviously performed well. But, I mean, now you've got the biotechs on fire participating, you know, and whether that's going to – that was all weak. So, you know, that should slow down eventually. But you got the financials starting to perk up a little bit, especially here in the pre-market as well. I mean, there's just a lot of catalysts for this market to go higher. And, I mean, when you start analyzing it, really – you know, what is the reason it's going to drive us down? So I'm not betting on, you know, I'm not making the bearish bet right now. I'm just going with the flow. We get a catalyst all of a sudden, you know, and like a macro catalyst, maybe I change that thesis. But as of now, I'm going to stick in the bull camp.
And geopolitical concerns really kind of quiet here. So
it is.
Yeah. So going back here, Friday, that Russell rebalance, was there anything that popped out to you, any great moves?
You know what? It was a pretty quiet Russell, and it's been quiet for a number of years. But, you know, there was some individual movers, some stocks that actually gapped up or down on the close. Some smaller ones. There was a couple bigger ones that had little moves there. But, like, just for instance, check out Johnson & Johnson. Look at the last 5 minutes of trading. You can see the big run-up that it had because it had a big buy imbalance that came out. So you can see J&J was around at right before the buy and balance came out about 345. The stock was trading around 135.75. By the end of the day, it tacked on another 75 cents, and that was all due to a huge buy and balance there. So you had a little bit of movement like that, but it's not like, you know, the thing was moving $2-3. Still, though, a 75 cent move for Johnson & Johnson on a buy and balance is significant and something to take note of there. So there's a little movement there. There's a Canadian bank, CIBC, if you check out the chart of CM, that actually was moving up. And if you see it on the chart, it'll say, you know, it looks like it was 81.36, and then boom, it ended up closing down at 80.64, I believe, on the opening print or the closing print, and then it actually went ex dividend, so it's $1.27 ex dividend today. So the adjusted close is actually 79.69. But there was a little bit of action in the last couple of minutes on some individual stocks. If you want to look at some smaller ones that were moving there, I was looking. I just jotted down a few of them there. Check out BRKR. I don't know anything about this stock, but it ended up moving big time right at the end. You see, it was trading just at, I'm just trying to grab the times there, and you might be better at it on your chart there, Joel, but at 348, the stock was 28.5, and at the close, it went up to 29.98. So, boom, you know, taking off there as well. So, there was some big movement there right at the close on a few stocks.
All right, so let's get in to the morning news here, and I guess we can start with a lot of things going on in Canada, Dennis. I don't know if you picked up your bearings at all, but there's a little piece on the Great White Short, and
what's that?
Referring to the housing market in Vancouver, yeah, and Toronto, yeah, and its linkage to some of the big banks here, but I don't know. I mean,
I got a story for you on the housing market if you want it.
I want
I don't know if he's listening or not. He sometimes listens to the show, but my friend Jeff, who bought a couple of houses in Barrie, which is about 45 minutes north of Toronto. So that market's been booming as well. As you know, Toronto prices keep coming up. All the surrounding areas keep coming up. 4 years ago, he bought his house and he bought a rental house. And I think he paid like $280, and it might not be exactly right, but I'm close. He paid $280 for his one house, and then he paid like $220 for his rental. 6 months ago, that rental was going for $480. So in 4 years, and his regular house is going for $600, like the equivalents. So basically, in 4 years in this market, he over doubled his money. The houses went up over 100% in 4 years. So, yeah, it just seems crazy when you start thinking about like a three-bedroom rental is going to go for $500,000. So in the last month, my buddy was telling me those prices have come down very substantially. So it's kind of basically crashed. Where that rental was going for $480, he says it's now down to $380. So like looking, and so it's kind of, you know, people are trying to get out at them. They were trying to get at the top, and now they flooded the market with supply, and the prices are coming down very quickly here. So that house, you know, the rental house has basically fallen $100,000 in the last month is what he's saying.
You
know,
and
that's maybe not, you know, of all the areas in Toronto, but it's basically in the last month really cooling off fast. But, you know, when the houses go up, they don't go up 100% in 4 years without some type of correction. It's, you know, like the stock market itself. You know, it's got to be, there's a little bit of irrational exuberance happening there when everybody's just buying houses as quickly as they can. But, you know, what's the driver? It's low interest rates. I mean, you see the same thing in the U.S. Low interest rates continue to, you know, prop up the, you know, the housing market and continue to inflate prices. So, you know, that's the downside. When you keep the interest rates low this long, somebody, you know, with a, you know, a 2.5% or 3% can afford a hell of a lot more house than they can at 6 or 7%. Or even when you think about back in the 80s when they were 15, 20%. You can afford a lot of house when you're only paying 2.5% interest.
Yeah, that's dropping. I mean, if he's obviously not trying to sell, it's probably a whole different if, you know, if he was actually needed the money he was trying to sell. But real quick, the Canadian banks, though, I mean, Bank of Nova Scotia, I mean, these things don't really look like they're under pressure yet. I mean, the charts don't look too bad.
They don't. We're
back, you know, so it's rhetoric for now. But so far, these banks, TD, I mean, they're all holding up. They don't look great, but they're certainly not looking like anything like the 10-year anniversary. That was saying they came up in Barron's. It was in June of 2007 when the whole Bear Stearns thing got started with two of their hedge funds going down. But right now, things are, if you're looking for a catalyst for a decline in the market, Barron's is calling for it in the Canadian banks, but the charts are,
I mean, there's a lot of issues, Joel. You know, I kind of go along with Barron's here. There's a lot of issues for the Canadian banks. Now, these issues, you know, might not come to fruition, but housing is one. Did they mention oil?
No.
Dollar Dog is mentioning oil to me,
yeah,
as well, but did they mention oil,
no,
as a possible catalyst?
A little bit.
So that's another reason. And Bank of Nova Scotia, we talked about this last week on the chart, BNS. That's one that has major exposure out west. I mean, if these oil prices continue to go down, or they continue to stay low, you could potentially have some Canadian companies, some smaller drillers, and some smaller oil companies in Canada that could potentially go under. Well, there's some loans out there, and a lot of them from the Bank of Nova Scotia, but when you talk out west, because Bank of Nova Scotia is a major bank out west where you have all these oil wells out there. So in Alberta, and you think about that, oil prices continue to go down. You start to worry that, hey, maybe there will be some exposure there too from, oil as well. So there is some reasons out there. The question is the market just going to shrug it off like the market seems to shrug everything off? But, housing and oil are two big issues for the Canadian banks. And I kind of go along with Barron's on this one. I mean, it kind of feels like a little bit of a low risk short. You look at that weekly on the Bank of Nova Scotia. I mean, you're shorting right near the highs in 2016 when we were really worried about oil. Bank of Nova Scotia went down all the way to $35. Now it's up here at 60, and it's still, you think about it, you're still paying a dividend. The dividend's 3% or something like that. But there is definitely some meat on the bone, a lot more meat than was on the bone back on 2016. So, obviously Bank of Nova Scotia is probably safe. But at the same time, if you want to worry about something, oil and housing are two reasons to worry about Bank of Nova Scotia.
Good point there, Dennis. All right, let's move on to stick with the Canadian theme. Goose is doing a secondary here, Canada Goose, and that chart's look okay. That stock IPO has done all right, so it's some shareholders. Spencer, you got the news on that?
It's a 12.5 million share offering by selling shareholders.
And sometimes by these selling shareholders. So, if it's just a secondary offering where they're just, obviously raising more capital. But it's just from selling shareholders, they're not really raising more capital. So it's not really dilution in that way. It's just coming from the other shareholders. Where you get other secondaries. So the secondary that really hits the price is often the one that's full dilution. Like, we're going to have more equity out there. When you get selling shareholders, it's just like taking, obviously from one shareholder to another. So it's not dilution. The last shareholder isn't worse off. I didn't read the details of it, but it sounds like if it's from other shareholders, they just want to dump some of their shares.
Digesting the move from earnings went to 18 to 24, basically pulled back the 50% retracement at the $21 area. Let's see what happens if they get this under 21, currently trading 21.24. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 lows right below the 20.80 area. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as well. Coming back on the upside, let's see if you can get to the close at 21.92.
What else do you have? Do you have anything else from Canada? It's like a Canadian show.
No, just the Barron's.
That was all the Canadian stocks. We covered them all.
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to some other news here. And if you want a big loser of the day, check out the chart of ARMC, because this one is getting annihilated here this morning. Spencer, looking at our conic, this is a legacy Alcoa. Actually, it's coming back from the lows. It really got hit there an hour ago, and now it's coming back off those lows. But what's the news here?
Yeah, Arconic, they said in an email that they knowingly supplied flammable panels for use in the Grenfell Tower, which is, of course, that high-rise in London that burnt down a couple weeks ago and killed a lot of people.
So this thing got killed here about 20 minutes ago. It's starting to come back, Joel. How low do we get? Because I was bringing this up. This looked like it was going to be the loser of the day. It looks like it's bounced back already 10%.
Got to 21.60, back up at 24.14. Now,
I wonder if they said something or if something else other came out, because this thing just caught a bid here in the last 5 minutes, and it's relentlessly going up here right now.
We'll have to check the tape on that, but still yesterday's close is something that you want to keep an eye on. That's up at 25.54. That was near the high of the day at 25.56. Several highs in that area, actually a double top there, so we will keep an eye on that. Coming back on the downside, have a hard time getting back down to that low at 21.60. This thing was really weak going into this as well, so maybe you just had a little bit of capitulation selling and coming back up. But keep your eyes on this one. It's $3 off that, or $2.50 off that low print at 21.60.
Not a lot of stock traded down there though, right? Because I was looking, it was very thin at that time. And that's the one consideration. When news comes out at 7 in the morning or at 6:30 in the morning, there's not a lot of people who are trading, so there's not a lot of liquidity there yet. So you could get one or two sellers that could knock the thing down $3. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, people come in and digest, oh, well, this isn't as bad as, you know, other people, you know, the few people who sold down there are thinking, and then the real money comes in and starts to buy it back up. So sometimes things overshoot just because of lack of liquidity, and I think that's probably what happened here in the case of ARNC. Full disclosure, I still have a little bit of ARNC, I think, in my portfolio. That was when the Alcoa spun off there. I don't think I ever got rid of it, but it's funny. I got 75 stocks. I can't remember if I actually sold my Arconic position or not, but full disclosure, I think I still have a part of my position that I've had on years in Alcoa, which is part of it is now ARNC.
Yeah, let's see if it can recover. Once again, that close from yesterday is 25.50 And I mean, this is bad news. I mean, that was a serious fire. If in fact it is true, the information that we're hearing up here, there could be some more potential downside here for ARNC, the legacy Alcoa.
Fuzzy's talking about Kite, K-I-T-E Pharma here, and that stock has just been on fire. It has been an absolute monster. Out of all the biotechs, this has been one of the best ones in the last month, and I believe Kite is actually at all-time highs. There's not a lot of biotechs that are making new all-time highs every day because they got beat up so bad back in 2014 and in 2015, but this has just been an incredible move up here for Kite. This was $70 if we just go a month ago. Stock is now $103. It's up here again another 3 points this morning. Not sure if there's news or if this is just follow through momentum, because all of these biotechs are just on fire right now.
There is no new news that I'm seeing. I think it's just follow through from, you know, yeah, the fact that they have a bajillion drugs in trial and all of them produce good data.
And they're after the growth ones, you know, like the Gileads have been, you know, going up. But at the same time, the ones that have really taken off here in the last month are the smaller biotechs or the medium sized ones that got the growth. So, you know, the big guns, like, sure, you know, Amgen's had a move. Sure, Biogen's had a move, and, you know, from 250 to 280. But when you start looking at the ones like Kite, when you start looking at the ones like Bluebird Bio, B-L-U-E, when you start looking, you know, at CBIO or what was the other one?
C-A-R-A.
So, yeah, those things have just been monsters in the last month. So huge moves. I mean, okay, so people, I'm getting multiple emails here. It seems like every day people want to ask me about biotech stocks. I'm starting to get, like, I think the trade was like a couple of weeks ago. And I, you know how I always say, once the train's left the station, you hop on the moving train. Some, you know, for me, sometimes, you know, that's a way to end up, you know, falling and getting hurt and run over by the train. So I don't like to jump on the moving trains. I mean, all of these have moved so much. You can ride the momentum, you know, ride it, but just be careful, because when these things turn, they'll fall 10% in a matter of minutes. So, you know, they will have a turn here eventually, because stocks just don't go straight up forever. Not saying Kite, you know, can't continue to go up. Sure can. This train can continue to go for a while, but the turn is so hard to identify there. So if you're coming in with new money here now, I feel like you're chasing it.
Not sure what that 110 even print was about here. It was only on a couple thousand shares.
I traded 110 today?
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. Oh, you know what it is? Okay, I can see the 200 shares. It was an off-exchange trade at 110. So, you know, some, you know, that looks like a retail order probably going off at maybe when there was no market and they filled them really high. So I don't know. If I was at 110 buyer, I'd be calling my broker right now. If you're listening, 110 buyer, I'd be calling my broker and asking for a trade break on that, because that was 101.40, and the next print after that was 101.40, and then you see a 110. That looks like maybe it just went offer high and a retail order came through and some market maker filled that retail order at the offer, which was probably very high at that time. I think that retail trader or whoever that made that trade at 110 should be asking for a trade break.
Yeah.
And they would get it. But the thing is, if they don't call, and I don't just give away free money, so hopefully the person that bought that at 110 actually calls.
All right. 10066, that was your closing print on Friday. That was your all-time closing high as well. 101.47, that's what you need to come back down to fill the gap. Man, just a lot of green candles in here, but keeping an eye on the closing price of 100.66, and the other stock that I've been just watching go up, probably the best percentage performer. Kara had some good news on it on Friday, got up to 23.95. That's a that's a pretty looking daily chart as well.
Wow.
So little Trouble. Sector rotation here. Before we move on down, Wardog wants to ask us about HTZ. And, boy, this stock cannot catch a bid here. Got down to 8.52, had the bad earnings reports. I mean, isn't Mr. Icahn pretty heavily invested in this one too, Dennis?
I think he still is. Is Icahn sell at losses? He's one of those old legacy guys that doesn't like taking his losses, so he sticks with them and then he gets active or whatever. You know what? The only thing – okay, so Hertz has been ugly. The trend is not your friend. It's not a pretty-looking chart. One thing I'll say, we said this on Thursday, we said this on Friday. The dogs are starting to bark, and when the dogs start barking – these stocks that start to catch bids, and that's what you saw on Friday. All of a sudden, Hertz went from 890 to 950. That was a nice move. Could you have a two-day move in here, downward dog? I think you could. I think you could see 10 bucks on this thing. Do I want to buy into my invest portfolio? Hell no. That chart's still just ugly. Fundamentals are hurting. Uber's eating their lunch. I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to own this. But is it a trade? Is there a potential two-day trade in here? I think so. I think this thing could end up seeing, you know, 10 bucks in the next couple days, if not today. So that's just my opinion. Now, you don't want to get married to these positions because when the cash starts flowing back out of them, they do. But we talked on Friday morning. We were saying, oh, maybe Fitbit's going to catch a bid. It actually did. Fitbit actually went up 15 cents. You can say, what's that? It was only a $5 stock, so it's a 3% move. GoPro caught a little bit of a bid. We were looking for other potential dogs. Chat, you know, some other potential dogs out there, throw them out there right now because some of the dogs are barking. They're looking around, looking for stocks that haven't gone yet, trying to find cheap stocks that might actually catch a little bit of a bid, just getting brought up by the overall market. Still don't like these companies long term, but right now as trades, they're interesting.
Alan Lance and Barron's eye for bargains here, and he mentioned maybe he was listening to our show on Friday. He mentioned Fitbit as stock was so pent. Yep, he was some favorable ink in Barron's, and then another one that we follow so closely, Twitter. He's looking for some upside in that. Nice 3-day.
Well, that already had its move. It's had a pretty good move here from 17, 18, 15 the last 3 days.
And
I feel like it's had its move.
I don't know.
Maybe
it
continues to go.
Maybe
but
we get a wager on this one.
It doesn't look like Fitbit. It doesn't look like, but it doesn't look like the same. You know what I mean? Like the train left the station here 3 days ago on Twitter. Can it go? Can it keep going? Sure. But it's kind of like, okay, well, it could go down more here too. I mean, you know, it could get overdone. So, you know, you got a dollar and a half of air below you now too. So I'm hands off on Twitter, but the Fitbit and the GoPro are interesting to me.
Crocs.
I don't know. I might be trying up for trades.
Crocs.
Where's that?
That's at 7.5.
You know, that could get interesting. It gets above 750. All of a sudden, they want, you know, the shoes with holes in them.
Yep.
Maybe.
Yep. Great support under 720 if you're trading Crocs. And then Dennis just mentioned the multiple highs at the 750 area, 749, 755. They're all scattered there. So see if you get a little bump. Currently trading right there, so see if you get a breakout of Crocs off the open. And then the other one, boy, Dennis, a stock I don't think we've mentioned a few times on the show, Occidental Petroleum, OXY. Don't know how happy I'd be hopping into this sector
right now.
Yeah, that's oil. But I will tell you that Oxy has found a major buyer in this. You got four lows. Between 49.63 and 49.71. So major support if you get back down to that area. Johnny, 175, he's scrambling.
More dogs barking.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
Yep. He's looking at AK Steel.
Yep.
And this one is
Cleveland Cliffs.
Yep. AK Steel looking along rounding bottom here. Axes, if we're going to go into the dog category here, Axes showing
some. They're all barking.
They're all barking. And why don't we go over the Schnitzer Steel report here, Dennis and or Spencer. We did have some earnings for them, and that I noticed that was trading up in the pre-market. So
what's the symbol on that?
SCHN.
That's not one that I follow at all, but SCHN is trading up a buck or another half a buck here on earnings this morning, Spencer?
I know they're scheduled. I'm not sure if they have come out yet. They did report preliminary earnings last week, but I know they're scheduled to come out today. I haven't seen them yet, so maybe they're not out yet.
Okay, maybe
another dog barking. This chart's been ugly. Ace is saying, do we consider Pandora a dog? Yeah, I throw Pandora in that mix. It's been a dog. I mean, look at the chart from the last year. It's been ugly. But, you know, or in the last, at least in 2017, but it's catching a bit here now, too. There's some news on Pandora this morning, too, where I saw it go by on my stream. What was the news on Pandora?
According to Recode, CEO Tim Westergren is stepping down. Or plans
okay, and that's got the stock up another 30 cents. So, yeah, you know, 3 days ago, man, Pandora, same thing. So Pandora's been moving there, too. I think Ace was actually shouting it out there a few days ago, so good call, Ace. Man, this is, you know, this is the theme here that we're seeing here in the last few days, is the dogs are starting to take off. So, you know, you look at the ones that haven't went yet, maybe there's an opportunity. I think GoPro's a nice setup here.
All right, let's take a look at the daily chart of GoPro here, the former darling. Remember that thing almost traded $100? Let's look at the dailies. Just consolidation here right near. Low move is 715, though. You're finding a buyer ahead of that level. But if we're looking for a move up, we want to take out resistance. And I mean, you had that one spike high at 799, but some other highs here in the 780, 785 area. But for this one, maybe wait, see if it can establish, get above $8 and hold that for a breakout. Schnitzer reports at 830. Thanks, Bob. Also, I'm seeing mentioned here in the chat, the opposite, Mickey D's. That's not what. That's already had an incredible run. It just seems like you get the upgrade here all the time.
Trading. Is it upgrade again?
No, but I. That's why it seems like you get one once every few days. So, boy, oh boy, you had several runs up, a little bit of consolidation, a little run up. Now another consolidation. You made new all time high yesterday at 155.45. I mean, the other thing, too, about shorting this stock, I mean, I know they've done splits, you know, in the past, but just think that the fervor this would get if they did like a 3-for-1 or something, took it back down to a $50 stock.
Yeah, McDonald's has been an incredible move here. I mean, this is one I feel like it's lofty here now, $100 a couple of years ago. So I'm not jumping to McDonald's here, but I'm still touting the dogs here. So I'm going to keep saying set it on Friday. I think you got these charts of these laggards that have been, you know, lagging the market here. Those are ones that are starting to look interesting to me right now. Right. So, okay, let's bump over to other news here. STOR getting a Buffett pop here this morning. It's trading up 10% in the pre-market. Spencer, Buffett take a position in this one?
$377 million investment from Berkshire Hathaway via an $18.6 million share private placement at $20.25 per share.
Wow. So here's a big pop here in STOR, Store Capital. This was a dog, and, or at least over the last month it's been a dog, but Buffett is the way with, you know, everybody comes in when Buffett comes in. Now the question is, did Buffett probably buy it in the last month and a half? Probably. So he's buying at 20 or 21, and people are coming here this morning buying it because Buffett bought it, but they're buying it 10% higher. So, I mean, really, you're not getting any edge here by, you know, if you just want to chase Warren Buffett, you know, and you're just going to chase his calls around all the time, why not buy Berkshire Hathaway? Because then you're just, you know, you'll actually get to participate in these moves. I mean, you know, you got the extra 10% because Buffett would have bought it for Berkshire back then. Now it gets a 10% pop. I mean, I know people, you know, just say, okay, it's a short-term move and it's going to get the pop. But buying this thing up 10% because Buffett bought it at 21, you're going to buy it at 23. Just doesn't make sense to me.
Nice breakout here. And let's see what we did in the pre-market trading. We got up 23.55, back under 23 at 22.90. Buffett, they also mentioned that he's getting involved with that, I think it's called Home Capital, that one in Toronto. He gave a lifeline, put some money into that one. So trying to bail out. So Mr. Buffett making some investments. I'm not Store Capital. I'm not sure exactly what they're related to, but nice looking chart, getting a nice pop. Just be aware if we do go back into rally mode, not much in the 23 handle. I do see a high just above 23 in store, so we are below that. But also keeping an eye on that pre-market high of 23.55.
jump over to ratings land here, Spencer. There was a ton of them this morning, and I was having trouble with one of my computers here, so I'm going to lean on you for most of the ratings here. Give us, you know, some highlights on what's being upgraded, downgraded.
Pandora card an upgrade from Pat Crest. Duke Energy upgraded to buy a Goldman. Coach upgraded to buy a Buckingham Research. Costco upgraded to outperformer Raymond James. That's a big trender this morning I'm seeing. Downgrades to... nothing really jumping out to me. I see Grubhub downgraded at Morgan Stanley, DaVita downgraded at Jefferies, Intuit downgraded at Citigroup, but no real big downgrades. The Costco upgrade is the biggest one that I'm seeing today.
Well, let's go to Costco, because this thing has been down for 6 straight days since the Amazon news. It's 1, 2, 3. Is it 3? Well, yeah, it's been 6 straight days. So now you get an upgrade here today. You're getting a little bit of a lift. I'm going to say overhead supply, though, because there's so many people that are underwater in this thing. I just can't see it just bouncing back 5, 6 points because so many people have been murdered in it. I like it down. If you get a little bit farther, and I know, so I'm not coming here selling this thing short because it is Costco. I still like the company, and I don't think Amazon is going to. Yeah, I think Amazon's going to hurt them. I don't think it's going to, like, put them out of business. I don't think all of a sudden Costco's in trouble because Amazon might come into their space. Costco has a lot of purchasing power as well. But, you know, I do like it. If it was to get down to that 150 level that it was trading at actively through 2016, I think I might actually nibble on that in my investment portfolio. But it's 157 here right now. It's getting a buck and a half pop on the upgrade here. Joel, quickly give us some technicals on COST.
Yeah, you are getting the pop. And let's see if this is really on any – a little bit of volumes trading. I mean, this thing just got whacked. And while some of the other grocers or supermarkets, whatever you want to call them, stabilized, that wasn't the same with Costco. I mean, it just had that one little up day. And then it just kept going lower. Closed near the low of the session, 157.13. Once again, just trading up here on the upgrade. So, I mean, I don't want to chase it. Decent volume. Maybe let the, you know, let the dust settle a little bit. Maybe if it comes back down to this 157 area. The low on Friday was under 157, I believe. 156.56. Nice number there. So, not chasing it, also not shorting it, because you got a lot. You do a 50%
retracement. Middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it is the middle of nowhere. It did fill a gap from back in January, but there's also a gap here back from November of last year, which is well under 150. That was probably an earnings report that got it going. But some of these other grocers, like Kroger, made that low on that day.
It came back.
Yeah, and it came back a little bit. That made that 2046 washout. Target, I was looking. That made a low on that Friday. That came back. Kohl's, I think Kohl's is still flirting with it a little bit. That's been a week as well. Macy's, that made
well,
it
that,
a low.
Yeah, but those aren't related to the Amazon. They were already Amazoned a long time ago.
Right.
I think that's the main thing. Okay, so, and it's a good point you're making here. Like, you look at a Target chart. Well, grocery is only a part of it. Target was already partially Amazon because they are obviously a big apparel retailer. And, you know, Amazon's been eating, you know, obviously the apparel retailers or the department stores lunch there. You know, Walmart sells a lot of different stuff, too. So they're only partially, you know, we're partially Amazon there with the Whole Foods news. But, I mean, Costco was full on Amazon. I mean, you think about that. It's mainly groceries, mainly food. And if all of a sudden Amazon's going to be coming to the market, it could hurt Costco. I know Cramer's been pounding the table saying that he thinks, he thinks Costco's still a good company. But he's also been saying that this is going to hurt, you know, potentially Costco's margins as well. So COST, they're obviously, it's repricing here for Amazon coming into their market. I think there's going to be an opportunity here eventually, though. I still think, you know, there might be a little bit more downside, which is why I'm not jumping in yet. I feel like I'm going to get a shot at this at 150 eventually.
Yeah, $7 from here. S&P still up 6.5 at 41.50. Hit a high of 42.50. Clear. I mean, we had three highs in a row, right, at 24.40. So important we hold that former resistance on now trying to act as support in the market. Just wanted to go over a few of these other upgrades and downgrades. We did talk about Pandora already. Duke Energy, Goldman Sachs, what was the rating change on that one, Spencer?
Duke got an upgrade from Goldman there, neutral to buy.
Huh, interesting time in this one. I believe that hit an all-time high going back over 87. But I guess Goldman not too worried about higher rates as well. So let's see what's doing. Not got a print here.
Have a bet.
Yeah, I don't
big,
know.
Big,
I
mean, you know, utility. So it's not like these things go up 4% or 5%. I mean, you get an upgrade even if it's from Goldman, which is probably one of the most influential out there. It's still a big, thick utility stock. These things don't take off 4 or 5%. They're in there. The dividend's 3.95%. These are slower movers. You know, obviously, they've had really good moves here in the last few months, you know, slowly moving up. But, you know, upgrades and downgrades just don't move stocks like this 5, 6%.
Packing some punches is a Morgan Stanley downgrade of Grubhub. And that thing had rallied its way back to nearly the $48 level. Now trading down here, they really whacked this thing. Let's see what the pre-market low is in Grubhub, G-R-U-B, if you're following this one at home. A pre-market low of Grubhub is 45.75, trying to get back. In order to get back into yesterday's range, 46.05 was the low. So back in yesterday's range, 47.70, that was a close. Nice move here for Grubhub. Is that back near all-time highs here? Let's take a look. Yeah, all-time high in Grubhub is 47.95. So did we get there?
Right there.
Where did we get there on Friday? So 47.84. So
really close.
Well-timed downgrade here, at least looking at the charts in Grubhub. And we got our delivery of groceries again this week from Meijer's here. So things are changing in the food sector, food delivery sector as well. We'll see what Amazon's plans are down the road.
8:35 now. It's time to bring in our guests. We had a bit of an audible. Ryan Craver had to cancel, but we got Sean Udall.
We got Sean.
Sean, awesome.
So we're going to give Sean a call on the fly.
Okay.
Right about now. And
good
we'll
timing
see.
Here.
We'll see if Sean answers. He is, of course, the tech stock strategist. He is the CIO of Quantum Trading Strategies out in Arizona. Sean, you with us?
Good morning, Benzinga.
So much energy there. It's like 5 a.m. out there. Where do you get that energy from, Sean?
I don't know. I think it's God-given because I don't know. It's early.
Coffee's like crazy out there.
No, I mean, I'm only into like my first third of a cup of coffee. So, you know, I can't blame the caffeine.
All right, nice. Sean, some of the dogs have been barking here and, you know, Dennis thinks this Twitter move is way overdone. I think he's going to short 50,000 at 18.5 off the open. So what kind of guidance would you give to Dennis after this nice move? What was behind it? Me and you were Skyping the other day. I saw there was kind of like a sneaky upgrade, or do you think it's just market finding value finally in Twitter?
No, yeah, I think one, I mean, you know, I think Dennis trades in increments. He can trade long term, but I think he can trade in increments of like 82 seconds or something like that. So, you know, there might be a good short trade for, you know, 82 seconds to maybe 8 hours or something. And I'm being somewhat facetious, but I mean, you know, on any given day, the stock could drop 15 or 20 or 30 cents. I mean, I don't really make any money on nickels and dimes. It's just not the way I trade. Now, if you can make lots of money trading and capitalizing on movements of less than, you know, 20 and 30 cents, I say, hey, that's more power to you. And, you know, one of these days I might fire off some algorithms myself to start trying to make money that way. But I think that, you know, you could say Twitter's overdue for a move to the short side just for a little bit of a gap down because it had a nice move up. I would say it's overdue for a huge move higher for people who are willing to, you know, hold it a little bit longer. So I think we could have easily made a case that just going back to the earnings reports the last two quarters, the stock finally moved the way I think it should have moved and the way I predicted last quarter because they had a decent quarter. But again, I always bring this up. I'll bring up a stock like a Micron. You know, the way things work anymore, and Dennis will remember this, and you guys both, because, you know, you've been around this game for a long time. Stocks actually used to move quicker on the first good quarter. Now it seems like stocks don't really get rewarded, especially for any durable move, until like the third good report. So, like, if you get a first kind of out of the trough, better report, you get a little bit of a move up and then a shakedown again. Then the second quarter, if it's actually a decent report, you might get a pretty good move, and then most of the move gets faded. And everybody gets frustrated, and the algos basically stop everybody out who tried to buy it. And then if you finally get a third good quarter, and by the time then all the short-term guys have kind of given up on the situation, then sometimes you get this massive, massive move. And, you know, I just call it the catch-up move, because sometimes you'll get 3 quarters to 2 years of movement out of the stock in 1 to 2 quarters. And again, if you look at Micron, it's kind of the same. Western Digital, Seagate, you know, almost every stock now that gets really, really undervalued and then starts producing good news after a series of bad news. The pattern's kind of the same for all of them now. And again, I would almost say that's just sort of a new algorithmic patterns of how stocks recover.
Sean, I just got a couple questions, especially when I look at the Micron chart here. First of all, just an observation of mine is you had a lot of these older legacy tech companies that really were thrown out in like 2014, 2015, 2016. You can see when Micron went from $35 down to 10 bucks. You know, you had even Western Digital, which is one of the darlings now. In 2015, the stock was over $100. In 2016, Joel actually was close to buying the bottom of this. It got down to 35 bucks. You know,
that's
Seagate
right.
Was the same thing. You know, it was loved, you know, through 2013, 14, 15, went all the way up to 65, all the way down to 20, and now it's come back significantly. I mean, first of all, obviously the market was wrong when they were throwing all these stocks out at the beginning of 2016. Now the question, though, is, you know, we've bought Micron in the last year from 2016. So a year ago, this was $9. Now it's 31. Aren't we a little bit late to the party here on Micron now?
Yeah, I would say a little, because I mean I don't love the stock nearly as much now as I did at 10, and,
right.
And I don't have nearly the size of the position in Micron now as I did at 10, but you know, I still have some. I mean, my base case on Micron was like 30, 35. I would say, you know the stock could go to 45, 50 or 55, because you know why? Because Amazon's at 1,000. So, you know, the rules don't really matter sometimes. I mean, if Amazon can go to 1,000 or Netflix can go to, you know, whatever lunatic market cap they have, kind of anything can. And I would say that, so here's the thing with Micron. In fact, Cramer talked about Micron on Friday. I had a laugh because he could have said the exact same thing at the exact same time at the bottom, yet he didn't, right? Because he doesn't talk about stocks like that. But Micron, you're kind of threading the needle now. So in other words, what Micron does have to do is they have to deliver good reports. So the question really for Micron is, what is the durability of these really good reports going to be? But now it's not really a surprise. So if they have a big earnings beat and they guide higher, is anybody going to be surprised? No. But, you know, Facebook hasn't had an earnings surprise for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 quarters, and the stocks kept going up. So it kind of just depends. It kind of just depends how much more love is there, hey, do you know exactly how these algos are being programmed and why some stocks get anointed and why others don't? I don't know if any of us do exactly, right?
But I don't think anybody
does. But I would say this. I would say the first – so this should be the first really good quarter for Micron and not the last. So that's what – so I where you're really threading the needle is when you almost kind of know this is probably the last great quarter. And then you might have a series of good quarters, but it's what I call the second derivative of, in other words, you still have really good numbers on beats and in growth, but the second derivative, the rate of change is changing, right? So I always like things when the rate of change is accelerating. Likewise, I start disliking stuff or start getting less aggressive on the bull side when the rate of change is lessening, right? So... But no, Micron, I mean, if you just think about Apple and its cycle, but in Android, there's some other stuff having a good cycle too. But if you just think about Apple, they're not even making the iPhone 8 yet. So you know, you typically get crazy good sales for 3 quarters out of that device. So, you know, I mean, Micron should have really good reports through, I would say, July of next year. So you better be darn careful if you're buying Micron in, you know, anywhere from like May to June of next year. That's where it probably starts getting really dicey. And then you just have to know the situation. They have a bunch of other stuff coming. You've got other memory products that are coming. They've got growth in the data center, but they're going to need something more. When you get to that last one or two good quarters, they're going to need something more. So, but we'll just say, I mean, if you really look at Micron, though, my point was simple, that it was clearly an improving situation, and yet the stock had a really hard time getting above like $13, $14 until it finally did. And once it did, it kind of has been in ignition mode sort of ever since like 14 and a half to 17. The stock's been a really, really easy buy on dips. It had to have that third good quarter before it finally broke above 14. And yeah, you could say, well, that's a 40% move off of 10. But, you know, that's a stock that I could say should never trade at 9 or 10 bucks. That's how stupid it was.
DC1 talking about old tech and legacy tech. How about Cisco? CSCO got whacked after its last report and made that earnings low at the 30-50 area. It's been steadily climbing back, trying to get into that gap area all the way up to 34. Is this one on your radar at all, Cisco Systems?
A little, but, the problem with Cisco is they don't the difference between, like, a Micron and a Cisco, Micron is a cyclical play. So there's very definitive cycles you can play. And Micron's, you know, probably one of the best companies in the world at what they do. So you can say, well, Cisco is too. The problem is Cisco doesn't really benefit from any of the new evolutions in tech. So the problem is, you got cloud proliferation. They get business from it, but it's more of a negative than a positive. You got a company that I still love, Arista Networks, ANET, which I don't know if you guys remember. I mean, I was talking about that at $60. You know, that thing's more than doubled. Now, that's a little dicey here, but that's another stock that, hey, if Amazon can trade at 1,010, why can't Arista go higher? But you got cloud proliferation of much more efficient networking companies utilizing the newer technologies so you have all these things kind of taking market share away from the edges of Cisco. But at the same time, you know, it's a very cheap stock and they still have a lot of good products. I would say Cisco's problem is kind of like Apple's problem, is that maybe they just need one or two more good M&A deals to find some new areas of growth. The one good thing about Cisco is they are consistently doing M&A. They have a much better M&A strategy. I mean, this would be a stock that would be a probably a $12 to a $15 stock if you take away their last, 5 years of M&A. So their M&A kind of keeps them in the game. They've been a lot better than Hewlett-Packard. But I don't know. I'm literally a coin toss in Cisco. I don't love them, but Dennis will love this. You know, the longer the base, the greater the space. So if there's a big old tech catch up move and there's rotational money that's going to happen, a rotational trade, I would say you probably have a better shot to make money on Cisco than not. I would say I like something like Intel a lot better than Cisco, because Intel cycles are improving. They've got some stuff. They've got some deals that I like. So just splitting hairs, I would say if you're going old tech, I would favor Intel over Cisco.
All right, let's just rattle off a few here real quickly. Coming from the chat, Downward Dog is asking about FTNT Fortinet. I think I've heard you talk bullish about that stock.
Yeah, I don't mind that name. I definitely favor CyberArk and FireEye over Fortinet, but I think this is if you're going to be long Fortinet, some of these cybersecurity names. You know, this should be the quarter or the next few quarters. And like I say, they all got beaten up. You know, everybody bought a ton of cybersecurity product from 2013 through the middle of 2015. And then guess what? They bought tons of product. every company in the world probably pulled back on their cybersecurity spending for about 6 to 8 quarters. And that cycle's over. So now we're in a cycle where cybersecurity spending should be a lot better. So I would say look at Fortinet, look at like 3 or 4 or 5 other names in the group. Because I think most, Palo Alto finally had a good quarter. FireEye finally had a good quarter. By the way, I like Palo Alto a lot too. That was a stock that was very negative, I think, even on this show on, many, many, many tens of points higher. And, I think now we have the cycle. Palo Alto could easily go back to 200 bucks now and become a loved stock again. Just like it was before. Dennis was mentioning Western Digital, how it was so loved and got overcooked. and then it became hated. Well, Palo Alto's kind of done the same thing.
How about Hortonworks? Do you follow that one coming out of the chat?
I do. In fact, Hortonworks would be one of the names I actually, in my kind of personal top 20, that they're in it. Cloudera just had a bad quarter, but it wasn't really a horrific quarter. So the big bear case on Hortonworks was that, well, what are they going to do when Cloudera comes public? Well, they're going to do just fine. So, and that's more of a company that probably has been pretty underappreciated. You know, you're talking about a 40. I would kind of put Hortonet in this group of stocks I've talked about where they're doing 35, 40, 45% growth year over year. They've been doing it for pretty consistently for a while, and they really haven't gotten rewarded. So I think Hortonworks, that's HDP for the people who don't know. I actually think that stock's very undervalued. So I don't even know why Hortonworks isn't yet trading in the higher teens from the lower teens. But I think it will. One more good quarter, it'll probably launch it. Had a good quarter last quarter. And by the way, Cloudera, after getting absolutely killed, I'm starting to look at that long too. I didn't like that really at the IPO. But
what's
I
the symbol
that
on
was
that?
Like 23, and it's gone down huge.
What's the symbol on that?
CLDR.
CLDR. All right. Let's just go back. We'll just put a couple more in here for you. Legacy stock going back to the old days. HPE, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, has got whacked off the earnings. Coming back. Looks like you found a hard bottom there at 1650. Does this one have any long-term appeal to you?
Don't like it. This is just a challenge company. You know, there's tons of these new good companies just feeding at the trough of companies like this. So don't like it. I mean, yeah, is there a point that I could say, hey, there's a lot of value there and stuff. Yeah, but I almost don't really even follow that one anymore. I think they're very challenged, and there's so much areas of competition where they're losing out to other companies. I'm trying to think of a really good company to compare this to. You know, I mean, they're basically too big to fail, and they're basically – they got too many areas that they do have innovation that kind of keeps the fires burning, but there's just not much there to really like. So these kind of companies are tough. I mean, put it this way, I would take like, okay, Cisco versus this company, I'd be Cisco all day long over at HPE.
Two more before we let you go here. Checkpoint Software, nice run up, pulled back off that all-time high, 115.87, getting back up there. Does this thing just have more legs to take out that all-time high? Give us a quick take on,
you know,
CHKP.
Yeah, I mean, I do, again, I wouldn't be short the name, but I just wouldn't be long this name versus other names in the group. So this is a great case. I mean, the one thing that's been super pervasive is lower growth or slower growth tech companies with kind of like names have done way better than much higher growing companies. So I can pretty much line up the whole security space and find, you know, again, FireEye, CyberArk, Palo Alto, Fortinet. I could probably rattle off most of the higher growth names in the group and favor every one of them over Checkpoint. But Checkpoint is the one that tends to get, you know, institutional money that kind of just buys it and owns a piece of it because they got to own a piece of cybersecurity. So, you know, as long as the group is strong, Checkpoint should do fine, but it's probably one of my least favorite. Put it this way, if I had a group of longs, it would be like my least favorite long in the cybersecurity space, but I would not be short the name.
And Nutanix, we'll let you go with that one. Now, the stock, boy, got killed from that IPO run up to 46.78. Got down to 14.38 in May, now on the comeback trail, trying to get over 20 bucks. What do you see for the fundamentals in Nutanix?
Yeah, no, I think we were talking about Nutanix just like a week or two ago. I was buying some Nutanix last week. I was buying the Nutanix much closer to the lows. I like Nutanix. I mean, they had a good quarter. I think they got, you know, here's the deal. They got overly punished on a bad print that literally coincided with the start of their IPO lockup expiry. So you had IPO lockup expiry, and it wasn't really a bad quarter, but it wasn't a beat. They didn't guide numbers higher. So what did the stock do? I think it went from 31 to 15. You know, that was just a lunatic move to the downside. So I've kind of liked it anywhere under like 18, 19. I've liked it a lot. And no, I think fundamentals are good. Really good growth name. New, you know, you're past the IPO lockup expiry stuff. It's going to shake and bake a little bit, but I wouldn't be surprised to see this stock, you know, 23, 25 fairly quickly.
Sean Udall, CIO of Quantum Trading Strategies. He's on Twitter at UdallTechStrat. Sean, thanks a lot for hopping on today. Love having you on. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Sean.
S&P futures still hanging out near the high of the session. The high print this morning is 24.4250. Clearing those highs from Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at the 24.40 area. All-time closing high, that's a target I have on the upside at 24.4750. And the all-time high in the spoos from last week, we got a print up at 24.5150. Dennis, you seeing up buying balances so these stocks can catch up with the spoos this morning?
There's some. There is some. Alibaba, 74,000 to buy. Baba's already trading up a buck here in the pre-market. Noticing a buying balance in TSM as well, which is Taiwan Semiconductor. It is ex-dividend here today. Stock closed at 36.73. Just to close is 35.80. Stock's actually trading up in 36.5. I know it's a lot of stocks trading up in 36.73. I wonder if somebody bought it, didn't realize it went ex-dividend there, so it might have been a little bit to do with that as well. But it is ex-dividend here today, but it does look like it's going to open significantly higher than the adjusted close. So those people who brought it home for the dividend are going to probably be happy. Square SQ, another interesting setup here. 36,000 to buy this morning. Square, we were talking about that overhead supply at 25 bucks, that big order there. I think it might test it here eventually. It's really setting up. Like, look at this chart on Square SQ. If it could get above 25, you'd be in full breakout mode there again on Square. What do you think of that chart?
You see, I think you got to play in it a little ahead of that 25.
Even right here, yeah.
Yeah,
well, it's up a little bit now.
Yeah, we closed at 24.17, and I'll just rattle off the last four highs have been between 24.34 and 24.46. So it looks like someone has stepped off the 25, maybe come down to 24.5, maybe clear them up, then maybe they won't even be there back there at 25. We'll see, but definitely the resistance has come down here. In Square, Dennis, just looking at make sure we covered everything. Oh, we didn't talk about SeaWorld. Did we mention the news on SeaWorld this morning?
No, we didn't. The news on SeaWorld is they got a letter from the DOJ. This came out Friday, pretty late, if I recall correctly. Let me check the pro. This came out Friday, yeah, like 5:20. They announced that they received a DOJ subpoena related to disclosures and public statements made by the company on and before the August 2014 time period, which was related to the Blackfish documentary that came out around that time.
I got a trading position on it, so I'll limit my comments with SeaWorld.
Okay. I will just make a quick comment is when you see these kind of charts, it's funny how the charts kind of precede the news. And this stock had been in trouble and had four lows right here at the 1560 area. And then we talk about stocks getting a running start, you know, going to our support or resistance level. Well, you had a close on Friday at 1565. The low right there, 1556. So no upside here until you can clear those quad of lows at the 1560 area. Now you're getting into a scary area if you're long this issue. It came up, had a nice run in November of last year. It went from 1401 to 1690, and that low for November was 1379. I don't think we will see that in today's session. First, we're keeping an eye on the pre-market low of 1520. That's a pretty low volume there. And let's see if you can go back. Man, you just have a couple big bars in this thing back in November 8th and 9th. So a lot of air in this thing. If it breaks the $15, you had a low at 1511 on 1109. Could be some big trouble here for SeaWorld. Never like to hear lawsuits or anything along those lines.
Spinner talking about TTX, saying it was 25% short interested. It got some positive data here this morning. I'm not sure if Spencer's got the data there or not. But TG Therapeutics, TGTX, is trading on 3% in the pre-market. This fits my definition. It's one of those biotechs that hasn't started running yet. So, and they're looking for these companies. Like, I mean, it just seems like, you know, or the drug stocks, you know, that Han, it seems like those, you know, get found and then they go too. So, you know, this one sets up not bad.
All right, one more, Dennis, got to get your take on. You're talking about dogs. What about VRX?
Well, that's went, though, already. Now you're chasing.
Wow.
I mean, 3 days ago? Well, could it keep going? Sure, but do I want to buy something that was $13 4 days ago and now it's $16? I mean, now you're chasing it. You want to chase something that just ran 20% in 3 days?
Well,
yeah, sure. Could it go 17? Could it go 18? Sure. But I have no. This is in the middle of nowhere. Like, this is just what I'm saying. Is, you know, when you the thing was setting up nice, and I think we even talked about it on the show around 14. Now it's 16, 2 days later. So the station. Can you hop on that moving train and make money? Sure you can. But I fall under the rails a lot of times too. So I think you can hop on that moving train and lose money too. I think it's coin flip here now. So it's up again. Could the party continue? Sure, but I'm not chasing it here. I've never made money in my 18 professional career chasing stocks. The odd time you do, but in the long run, I find money chasing stocks. That's why I don't like chasing.
You don't think it's going back to 263.81? That was a high hit on July. Yeah, look at that.
Could it hit 20? Sure. Could be back at 14 too. So I'm out. You know, I'm just no trade for me here. I'm sitting on hands.
Okay, SOH. All right, Spencer, through this year on Monday, the first day of the week, what is on the docket for Tuesday?
Well, it's Tuesday. That means we've got to have Nick Shaheen on the show, of course. Every Tuesday, he's our options guy. But that's it for us today. Hope you enjoyed Sean's insights and insights from Joel and Dennis. Don't forget to like us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. You can YouTube on Benzinga TV or on our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Just search for Benzinga on any of those platforms. Also, don't forget about Benzinga Pro. Be the first to know. Trade faster, trade smarter with Benzinga Pro. It's Benzinga's real-time news feed where we get all our headlines that Joel, Dennis, and myself are all checking during the show. All right. Have a good rest of your Monday. We will see you folks tomorrow. Good luck out there.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.